I believe, that we lost some points on. And, I mean, that can certainly be addressed in a record of decision that we have central trash service or whatever, as well as, you know, whether we have sidewalks or not. We do have 6 acres to roam around and swim on, which I would personally say is better than sidewalks, but maybe not as necessary. But there's also a grocery store across the street.
All right. So. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
All right, is there anybody else who'd like to speak for this project?
Tim Davis from Branson. I wanted to point out a couple of things. I think Steve has done a pretty good job of explaining what he proposes to do. I'd like to point out that in the staff report, which part of it, staff report, breaks down into a score sheet, which probably is in your packet, where there are multiple categories and then a score assigned to each one. Scott ended up scoring this, I think this was a plus 18, that the staff ended up scoring. And I do think that's significant. Here's why. I've had occasion over the years to work on probably dozens of planning and zoning projects. And over that time, I ended up getting copies of applications for hundreds of P&Z projects and knowing also how the staff ended up scoring them. And I just, sometime back, not related to this case, but sometime back, I made up a spreadsheet of 186 different projects. And I did not find in those any, this is over a multi-year period, I did not find any where there was a positive score that got voted down, and there were several where there were negative scores that got approved. And, for example, there was a nightly rental called Chloe's Dream Home that got a minus 2 score and got approved. There were some cabins by Robert and Valerie Budd that got a minus 10 score, and yet they got approved for nightly rentals. One of Gary McSpadden's nightly rentals got a minus 6 and got approved. A family named Riggs also asked for a nightly rental. Their score was a minus 6, and they got approved. So my thought is it would be irregular to have something that scores a plus 18 and for that not to get approved. I can understand if the applicant came in and there were serious problems, maybe he gets a minus 20 or minus 50. I've seen scores as low as minus 52. If he got that, then I can understand voting against it. But once plus 18, it'd be really odd to vote that down. And then, again, John Epps had this project originally. And he came to the Taney County P&Z Commission back in 2001 and asked for a permit. And they did issue him a Division 3 permit where they say this whole area is a multi-use project to be used for multifamily, single-family, offices, and retail shopping center. I couldn't tell from the permit how they broke that down, if at all, or if they just said, here's a planned unit development and you can put these categories of things into your development. That seems to be what happened. They just said, you can put these categories in. And then Mr. Epps filed a voluminous Declaration of Covenants, but in that, which I wouldn't bore you with by going over in detail, but I do want to point out that in this, again, these are recorded, this is book 479, and this particular section's on page 6056, he describes how he plans the timeshare function to work at the Cross Creek communities. So he wanted the buildings to get built in there to have the potential to be timeshared, but he wanted his own firm to act as the management company. So anyone who bought in, if they used timeshare, they were committing themselves to use his company as the management company. And then the timeshare was structured so that people could have unit week purchases. That was the intent, that if you're going to do timeshare, you can sell off individual weeks. So my thought is, and this covenant got filed back in 2005. So my thought is, if it's been, the declarations and covenants have said you can do timeshare on a weekly basis since 2005, that's not inconsistent with having people come in and rent for a week at a time. So I submit that to you as one of the arguments in favor of compatibility. And that's all I have to say. Thanks for listening to me.
Thank you, Tim. Is there anyone else that would like to speak for this project?
My name is Matthew Creedon. I did hear that Lot 9, when my dad was discussing earlier, one of the ones that did have the nightly rental, or the timeshare kind of thing, had that on there recorded in this here. And also under some of, under one of the sections, it does say that anything under 30 days is considered nightly rental use. So, you know, with that other lot, 7A, I guess, up there, they did say, you know, that they were using that for rental purposes and stuff like that.
Okay.
That's all I got.
All right, thanks, Matthew.
Oh, yeah, it shows that the unit week numbers is 19 out of the whole year.
Okay. And then there's multiple. Okay. And that's for the undivided interest, right? This what's been sold to that one? Okay. Alright. Okay, is there anyone else would like to speak for this project? Okay. Is there anyone that's like to speak against this project? Okay, go ahead. Good evening.
Hi. My name is Sandra Strange, and I live at 112 Prairie Drive, which is in Cross Creek. And I just want to say up front that our community is totally baffled by this entire situation. To give you a quick synopsis of what has transpired, first this came before the planning and zoning meeting, and it was listed on their agenda as proposed nightly rental usage for duplexes. And you can see that in your handout by looking at Exhibit A and B. When it came time to vote, one of the board members made the comment that duplexes were not compatible in this neighborhood. But the board was told that they were not voting on the duplex issue, that they were only voting on nightly rentals, and that the duplex issue was entirely shut down. Then the board voted unanimously on all three agenda items to deny any nightly rentals. We were told at that time there was nothing we could do as a community to stop them from building the duplexes. But the very next day, the county posted a sign saying there was going to be a public meeting in regard to a Division 2 permit. And you can see this by Exhibit C. But when we got to this meeting, the builder was simply handed the permit without any discussion, and they were told to go for it. They could start their duplex project. When we ask, well, why are we here? Why was the sign posted that this was a public meeting? And the reply to us was, well, why are you here? Well, needless to say, the group was very unhappy. This permit, number 2, was pushed through under a decision of record that was issued 18 years ago to the original developer, not the new builder. And you can see this by looking at Exhibit D. When we tried to bring this to Scott's attention, that the Taney County Guidance Code says that the permit does not constitute a land use change and is not therefore tied to the property, that it does not transfer as part of property sale or ownership change. The reply was, the two had nothing to do with each other, but it was then pointed out that your code says they are a subset of each other. And you can see that by Exhibit E, F, and G. This was totally ignored, and the permit stood. A new builder was issued a permit 2 under a permit 3 decision, which does not allow transfer to a new owner. So this is the foundation of what has happened. There are now 2 issues that we would like to establish before this board. Both of these we took to our attorney, and we spent hours and dollars to get legal advice on. Our attorney says that we have not misinterpreted your guidance code. The county is ignoring the fact that it now has a new owner, and according to the county's code, should have started the application over to acquire the proper permits to build the duplexes. There does not seem to be any uniformity in your procedures. Now, the builder is asking for permission for 90 rentals. And according to your code, this is a condition for a special use permit and should start the application process over. And you can see this by Exhibit H. Again, they are a subset of each other, which means that one overlaps the other. This applicant should have been required to start the entire process from the beginning. The second issue is the nightly rental issue, and I want to substantiate with you that the original developer had recorded a set of covenants and restrictions to start selling some of the properties within Cross Creek as timeshares. But according to their covenants, the only legal description that was documented, and you can verify this by looking at Exhibit I, J, and K, was actually Lot 9 of Cross Creek. And if you will look at the next few pages, it's a legal document, and it's several pages long, and it's Exhibit L. That was recorded on July the 21st, 2010. And it's regarding a lawsuit that was filed by 51 plaintiffs against the original developer and others. If you will just thumb through this document, you will see that there are various individuals that purchased various deeded timeshare weeks for various amount of monies. In good faith, these individuals purchased merchandise from the developer, and he did not produce. So they sued for misrepresentation and false promise for something that was never delivered. Under state law, timeshares are defined as merchandise. So the defendants were found to be in violation of the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act. And you can see this by Exhibit M. And you can see, if you'll turn to, in that legal document, to page 9.
Mr. Chairman,
and you have that legal document in its entirety, and I'm talking for all 3 of his cases, that they were awarded a judgment first because they were denied access to the property. Second, the defendants were found to be in violation of the Missouri Merchandising Practicing Act.
Sorry, I'm going to give you about one more minute.
Okay, but I'm going to talk on all 3, so I'm doing it all at once.
Okay.
Okay? So I'm going to finish. And the defendants were found to be in violation of the Missouri Merchandising Practicing Act, and the plaintiffs were awarded under the act punitive damages at 1.5 times. And third, the property was titled back to the plaintiffs under a quiet title, which would have quieted any future challenges or claims against this property. Therefore, the property never became a timeshare. Timeshare may have been the intent of the original developer, but it was never realized. So that property that they're referring to on Lot 9 has actually been rented to a single-family residence for the past 6 years. And I want to let you look at the very last page of that handout. It's your guidance code and your definition, and it says, land usage and our improvements that are similar to that of other land usage and our improvements that are within one